Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Thursday morning. 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we will get to whatever text are remaining. So please utilize the text line. Joining us now on the line, friend of the show. We get him on a few times a year, but always appreciative of his time. State Representative Ernie Yarbrough joins us on the line. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me on. I always love coming on your show.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for making time for us. Well, the reason I'm going to get on, and this was a story from 1819 News, 1819news.com, a great website if I say so myself. But you got a couple of there's a couple of immigration bills being considered, but I want to get you to come on and talk about your efforts, something kind of mirror the Laken Riley Act that Donald Trump just signed into law. Kind of walk us through what you're proposing.
Sure, yeah. No, so this actually came about last session. So I saw it was a little bit later on in session. I was made aware of a bill in Georgia that was entitled the Laken Riley Act that the Georgia legislature passed, signed into law. And so I was looking into that. So this is a great bill. Obviously, it was before the election. So I went ahead and had an LSA draft an Alabama version of that and gave it the same name. And then when I filed it and I saw that Senator Britt came out with her Laken Riley Act, so I was like, all right, validation. We chose a good name, right? So, and hopefully great minds think alike. So, in the bill itself is predicated upon the idea, really, it was kind of a, you might call it a faith filing, because hoping and praying that President Trump would win, and in the mercy of God, he did. And so, you know, assuming that we have a federal government that wants to do their job in terms of enforcing the laws of the land and keeping us safe in terms of immigration, what this bill does, also entitled the Laken Riley Act, it is HB 7, it allows state and local law enforcement to enter into MOUs with the federal government, federal agencies, to enforce existing federal immigration laws. So it doesn't add any new laws to the books. It just says, hey, whatever the immigration laws are that is already on the books, that ICE and so forth are enforcing and are operating under to right the ship, as it were, of our immigration problem in this country and the crime and so forth. The one of the fastest ways to help facilitate righting the ship is if we can have our state and local law enforcement have a way to join in with kind of boots on the ground. They're already in the community. They know the community. They would probably have a good idea where some of that illegal alien criminal contingency is at. And they can jump in with their knowledge of local geographics and demographics and help get the situation under control quickly, working in concert with, you know, the federal government. And so that's kind of the heart and the idea of the bill. Is it's not mandatory. It just says, hey, this is an option. If state and local law enforcement want to do so, they can. And then they can put up some reporting on websites and other places at certain intervals of you know, their numbers, what they've done, just as a way to let the community know, hey, we're keeping you safe. But that's the general idea. That's the general gist of it, is that it's simply another available tool should state and local law enforcement wish to use it to be able to help us get our communities back to a safe place so that we can have immigration policies that make sense.
Do we have that problem in Alabama where you hear about it in other states? I mean, obviously sanctuary cities exist, but also a spirit of uncooperation, resistance, if you will, to efforts of the federal government to enforce immigration law or policy in this country. Because I suspect it exists. But I don't, you know, it's not quite as maybe blatant as like California or Illinois or somewhere.
Sure. Well, it may not be as blatant, right? You know, you see there are these protests, and I think Albertville and some other places that have popped up in regards to ICE and so forth. What I think is interesting, like, you know, we had some surprising, I think it's surprising to us because, you know, we as Alabamians and as Americans, it's easy to kind of go to sleep at the wheel, right? And so there were some surprising places of resistance that popped up in our state, for example, for the library books, right? You're like, wait a minute, why is this library board or this library group or these directors, why is there all of a sudden this big pushback against, you know, removing these books from our libraries that, you know, there's no way our kids should be reading this stuff, right? They shouldn't be exposed to this stuff. And so I think, you know, there's probably money trails, there's probably things, there's probably resource connections that we may not are aware of that exist until you pass good laws and you start faithfully executing and walking out those laws. Now, we've seen in the news, thanks to 1819, there's been reports of various, very serious crimes committed in our state by illegal aliens who are not only here illegally, then they're committing illegal crimes upon our citizens. So the problem exists. To what degree there will be resistance, there will be pushback, there will be obstacles thrown in the way of enforcing good and common sense immigration laws that are already on the books. You know, we'll find out. I think when you start executing a plan that returns sanity and normalcy to our immigration policies, you know, we will find out. I will say I was encouraged with my legislation last session. Not only did we take some amendments and did some working with Republicans, we also took a Democrat amendment, Senator Britt's bill received bipartisan support. But we took a Democrat amendment last session that simply said that we're not going to violate anybody's constitutional rights. So, I mean, that's an amendment that Republicans should all be in favor of. And so hopefully that will progress forward through the House and the Senate and be signed into law, because the intent here is not to target people. The intent here is not to mistreat people, but the intent here is to remove criminal elements and to enforce our existing laws so that we can bring back sanity to how we exist as a nation and protect our people.
Joined by State Representative Ernie Yarborough from Lawrence County here on the program. Representative, let's talk about immigration kind of general. That seems like that will be on the docket for you guys when you gavel in next week for this year's session. But, like, what brings any kind of illegal immigrant to Alabama? And I think there's an economic element that we have to acknowledge, right? And, you know, some of these jobs we have, you hear this all the time. Well, these immigrants are just doing jobs that other people won't do or able-bodied people won't do. But, I mean, I think there's a real disconnect here with the labor market and what people will do and what they won't do based on what you pay them or what incentives they have to get off the couch or disincentives. Maybe it's a, you know, some of these social safety net programs, but that's sort of the to me, the crux of the whole immigration question is, well, there's some kind of economic opportunity here, and that brings in all kinds of persuasions, all kinds of, immigration. And what are we doing to do what's in the best interest of the state and the people who are here legally, and not just here legally, not just here on a work visa, but here as a, you know, full-fledged tax-paying citizen?
Yeah, no, sure. That's a great question. I think number one, you know, we don't really know the full scope of opportunity for American citizens and workers when you're paying people not to work, right? So there's no question, like, we have put our farmers and our producers in a bind because we pay people not to work. We have onerous EPA regulations and all kinds of things that have been making war, not only on destroying godly character and incentive to work, because as the Bible says, if a man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat. Well, we undermine that, and we bring in all these EPA and onerous regulations and costs and supply chain issues that cause costs to skyrocket. And so you know, our farmers and our producers are put in a bad situation where they need work, they need help, right? So I think on one hand, we do need to address the situation where we have a documented legal track. It's not a citizen, not a citizenship track, but a legal documented track that works well for seasonal work for our farmers, because that's important. And we need our food supply as a matter of national security. So I do think that's worth looking at, so that we protect our farmers and the ability for our producers and our growers to do what they need to do to get us the food supply that we need as a nation. But on the other hand, there's no question that we're going to have to address the issue of how we incentivize people to not be producers and workers from the you know, the jobs on the farms up. So, you know, we caused this problem. Our government has caused this problem, and the people have allowed it to happen from multiple angles of EPA regulations and welfare and all these things. And I think that our focus needs to be on getting Alabamians back to work. And that doesn't just mean removing onerous regulations, but we have to look into removing financial incentives that keep people on the sidelines, because it's just people, some people are just not going to go back to work,
right,
unless they're hungry.
Well, I mean, and Representative, I think big picture wise, I mean, you know, we put such an emphasis on this state, especially what you guys do in the legislature, on economic development, on incentives, on, you know, all these jobs programs, all these workforce development programs. But, like, the workforce isn't ready to come back to work, because what I would argue is, you know, 56% labor participation. Well, what's keeping that 44% of able-bodied adults away, and you just haven't incentivized it perhaps enough? You know, what kind of financial incentive? And we're doing something here that keeps wages artificially low with bringing in all this labor or whatever. And, you know, there's just no, they're not looking at the supply side. It's more of a demand side thing to them, but looking at where the labor's coming from, what's drawing this immigrant labor to Alabama, and all the different, you know, things. And then furthermore, there's a burden on, we could talk about this all the time, but like the burden on the local infrastructure, the schools, the healthcare, in each of these community, right? And it's not that we are, you know, there's people who are rejecting these people from coming, but it does have an impact on the economy, on the job market, that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats, yes, but a lowering tide by bringing in artificially artificial elements in your labor pool lowers wages, and it lowers the tide sometimes as well. And that's what you got to look at. Like, we got to get people back to work. What will it take to get you off the couch and in a job? And we always had the discussion, like, well, we'll just bring in more business. We'll teach more skills. But the real trick is, well, this job is going to pay so much that it's cost prohibitive for you not to take this job, is the thing that's always missing from this discussion.
Yeah, I mean, we not only do we need to look at what we need to do to get Alabamians off the couch and back to work, and part of that could also be the cost of daycare and, you know, one job just being used to pay for daycare. The other part of it, you know, in terms of, like, if we are going to utilize documented workers, it doesn't make sense to have an immigration policy where you allow them, you know, whole families, we give them all these benefits, we give them tax breaks, they don't pay taxes, they get education. Like bring workers and let workers, if we're going to do that, right, if there is a niche for that somewhere, bring workers in through a gated track and process, and they go back home. They don't get all of our education benefits. They don't get all of our tax benefits and all of our health care benefits, right? So that's got to be approached from a sanitary perspective, a sane perspective, where we are saying, okay, you're here in this specific purpose. We're not going to allow you to be a burden on systems X, Y, and Z. And I think that, coupled with what do we have to do to get people off the sidelines and back into the workforce, you know, that's a question that we're going to have to address and make sure that we don't have artificial, you know, at whatever level of government, artificial incentives that's keeping people back from getting back into the workplace, because it's a serious issue.
Well, I think it's not that, I don't think it's like something where, like, intentionally doing, but we don't talk about that, and we're not looking at it. You're right. The child care thing is very relevant here, and some of your colleagues have talked about that. Make some of these guys that you're giving these tax abatements to, or some of these breaks to, help pitch in and figure out a child care component to help get people back to work. But there's all these other there's other circumstances, right, that we assume we just kind of ignore, it seems like. And I think business is okay with bringing in immigrant labor, and like, here's the thing, Representative, we're talking about Albertville, talking about Russellville, these historically once upon a time were just kind of average rural Alabama towns that have had their culture completely upended and changed. That there's what's bringing them there, and why didn't they make more of an effort to hire locally?
Yeah, well, I think that's why it's important to look at these NGOs, because these NGOs are getting, turns out, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they're facilitating this flooding of the interior of our country with these, these families and illegal undocumented workers and aliens and families. And look, you can't blame, in one sense, if I was a family from a third world country or whatever, and it's like, hey, there's a path and they're doing this, in one sense, you understand the human perspective of, yeah, we're going to go there, right? But that's where we have to manage our country, right? And so we have to, if there's all this money being spent for NGOs where they are undermining our laws, undermining our national security, and those NGOs, and I know there's a package of immigration bills being discussed where we want to do our part to expose these NGOs. This stuff needs to be exposed and put forward facing what's being done, and that funding needs to be cut off. If they're going to take advantage of our laws or ignore our immigration laws that we set up, then the people of our country need to know about it. Businesses who are also utilizing that supply chain that's undermining our immigration laws and the security of our country, the public needs to be made aware of this. And then as Trump is doing, we can fix the problem, get the criminals out, get the illegal alien situation under control. Then we can have a discussion about, okay, where are we at? Are we doing our part, to your point, to bring in American workers, get off the sidelines and get to work? And then if there is a path where we need some other help, how can we do that in a way that is a very concentrated, focused application of what they're here for? That's right. Not a burden upon our education, not a burden upon our health resources. And if there's things that they have to pay for, then they should pay for it. But the taxpayer should not be burdened with people who are not citizens of our country getting all the benefits of the citizenship without actually being a citizen. Because it's an untenable situation that leads to abuse. Just like paying people not to work leads to a situation where you have a decimated workforce.
Representative, we're out of time, but thanks for hopping on this morning, and let's do it again sometime during the session.
Love to do it. Thank you, sir. It's always an honor. God bless you. Godspeed.
All right. Stay represented. We got to get a break here. Be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.